They certainly are bouncing out there in the NNL. We're back here in Etamiyan Crescent. We're not playing NNL. Etamiyan, I love T-Perch. We love to be here every day to talk football and sports in general with you. And let's talk about other sports very quickly before we return to football. US Open action currently ongoing. And there's not so much in terms of shocks, but Novak Djokovic made it through earlier on today, winning 3-1 against American Broxby. Also ongoing is Van der Zandschulp from the Netherlands taking on Daniel Medvedev. Or actually, that's a full-time score. It finished 3-1 in favor of you-know-who Daniel Medvedev as well. The match is currently ongoing as well across the US Open. Some shocks, you can say, but maybe expected, especially in the women's category, have been experienced. But the big conversation has to be with the American, Shelby Rogers, who expects death threats on social media after her defeat of Emma Raducanu. Yeah, that's her name. I got it right. American Shelby Rogers says this is quite a... I don't know, quite a very, very unfortunate thing to say. It's not happened yet, but she knows it's going to happen. Say she expected to receive death threats on social media following a US Open fourth round defeat to Emma Raducanu. Now, the 28-year-old, who is ranked 43 in the world, was beaten 6-6-1 by Britain's Raducanu. And taking a quote from her, she says, "I'm going to have 9 million threats and whatnot. At this point in my career, I'd say I'm used to it. This is really, really sad when a player comes out to say such things." Said, "I kind of wish social media didn't exist." Now, this is coming off the back of increased online abuse and racist abuse as well for not just footballers. It used to be predominantly footballers, but now it's spanning across all sports. Tennis itself is starting to suffer this as well. Rogers is a compatriot. It's not just Rogers was expecting death threats, but her compatriot Sloane Stephens also spoke out about the online abuse she actually received following her 5-7, 6-2, 6-3 third round loss to Angelique Kerber. Now, I don't understand how anyone who abuses Sloane Stephens expects Sloane to defeat Angelique. I mean, Angelique is the more recognized or more dominant player, successful. Yeah. So when she does lose, it's unexpected results. But she says she received a death or online abuse more like after that defeat. "You could probably go through my profile right now," she says. "I'm probably a fat pig," in quote, and words that I can't say right now. That's Roger speaking, who knocked out world number one Ashley Barty in the third round. It's really unfortunate, and some of it does get to your head sometimes. Now, you put this alongside in the same breath as Naomi Osaka complaining about mental health issues. This is really, really starting to be a problem that you would expect. Sports in general have got to come out and try to stamp out as a unified body. Well, the Women's Tennis Association, that's WTA, says it is working on the issue of online abuse towards professional athletes with a risk assessment and management company called Theseus, or Theseus, T-H-E-S-E-U-S, Theseus. Now, my question is, because it's largely an individual sport and not as much in terms of capacity crowd when you go to the stadiums for tennis, unlike football, do you think it will be easier to curb out online abuse and racist chants and all that in tennis than it will be in a sport like football? Let me start off with you, Anthony.
No. I think it's, you know, sports is sports across board. I've said this here. Social media aren't ready, and they play an integral part in this triangle. They are maybe the most important. Yes, you know, the leadership across board, you know, also has its role to play. But social media has the fundamental role to play in all of this. And that's taking bold step as regards users of social media. And I said this, I think some weeks back, that social media aren't particularly ready to tackle this head on because there is the financial loss that could come from doing the right thing. They know, yeah. I mean, we've talked about the fact that not everyone should just randomly wake up one morning and, you know, just open, you know, one just handle. Yeah, and hope. I mean, it's so easy. Anyone can open whatever handle without, you know, the necessary verification purposes or, you know, means and all of that. Until social media come out to say, listen, we want this and this document before you're able to, you know, join this, yeah, this platform, probably your driver's license or probably your national identification number or something concrete that can actually be traced to your doorstep or be traced to you, to your family or something. Until social media are able to come out with this, as far as online abuse is concerned, it will continue. Now, they talked about creating a new feature on Instagram and Twitter, which is like an auto robot. So what it does is it deactivates an account, which is, you know, perceived to have racially abused somebody, or, you know, racial words are being used. That's what they said, you know, that being the new update on Twitter and Instagram. I do not know how authentic, how effective, you know, that can be. Then again, but like I said, just going back to the roots. And also, it's also a call to duty by, you know, football and sports, different sports across the world to come together and see what they can do. Probably mount some sort of pressure, you know, on social media companies to take this bold step. Because if they don't, we'll keep running in circles. Now, you know, we've said here that racism and all of these things, they are institutional. It's likened to the race, the human race. It can't be completely expunged, all right? But on social media, it can be. On social media, it can be. And, you know, that's where we talk about where, you know, these social media companies come into play. So, I mean, Sam, that has got to be, for Shelby, it's very, very sad. One of the real disappointing, you know, fact was, you know, it was a loss on home soil and all of that. And the fans were really, but, I mean, it's still no excuse for all of the shenanigans we have been seeing in recent times.
Absolutely sad when it comes to the situation. Now, while I'm going to ask you, a couple of months ago, I think, we had this world or massive boycott. People were deactivating or turning off their social media accounts.
Personalities,
sports personalities, yeah.
And teams also.
I think they did that for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And when they even call on and back, and even there was so much noise about turning it off, not so much noise of turning it back on. It seems like that hasn't really worked. That boycott really didn't work. And I'm not so sure, but I guess from when I started being a big fan of sports, there was a time when I never even heard of anything called online abuse or racism. It's not like it wasn't there, but it wasn't this predominant. And now all of a sudden, I guess the advent of social media has given rise to the increase in these amounts. But I mean, what do you make of all of this? What steps would you suggest that sports, Anthony has talked about the fact that it's largely on the part of the social media companies to, you know, take a step. But sports in general, tennis, football, we've seen some measures taken in football. It's absolutely non-effective. But what steps do you think can be taken as sports or sporting bodies to at least protect these players? Because we're talking about mental health issues. I mean, look at this, 9 million death threats expected for a player. How do you go out and perform?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't think that sporting federations care enough about athletes. Football especially, even though they posture as though they do, with all of the catchy buzzwords that they use, you know, say no to racism and stuff. But relating it to social media, I think, yeah, well, before I started using social media, I've been hearing about racism. Very popular story is that of Samuel Eto'o Fields in La Liga, I think it was Real Mallorca,
yeah,
when
yeah,
he stormed off the pitch. And, you know, so the thing is, even when we started getting used to social media, it wasn't this rampant, because I mean, law of averages. If there are 10 bad people in 100 people, right, in every 100 people, and then just 10 people have signed up to use social media, it means there's a likelihood that there's just one racist, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the number of registered users goes up to 1 million, it means that the number of racists goes up to 100,000, right? So I think that the more these social media companies' platforms keep growing, then the more these bad eggs continue to join these platforms. So what I think can be done, I think it's really difficult for sports to solve this problem, because like Anthony said, it's a societal issue. It's not a sporting issue. You can talk about how...
But sports can be perceived as giving more of a platform to these online abusers to perpetrate this dastard act.
No, I don't think sports is giving them a platform. I think sports is a channel through which they express who they really are. Because away from sports, this, if you're a racist, you're a racist, right? If you are an abuser, for instance, then it is who you are. It is something that you do. So now, there are channels through which you do that. I read a story, I think it was during the Euros, about how after football games, when England loses games, especially at home, how the rate of domestic abuse against women
increases.
Is a channel through which these people do it. It's not, they don't do it necessarily just because of the sports, right? It happens after the sporting event, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it is not the sports that is making a Mr. X to beat his wife, Mrs. X. The Mr. X already...
Is it?
I think already has the...
Tendency inside of him.
Do it, you know,
but
so,
then watches a game of football and then decides, okay, that aggression.
So I'll give you the easy solution.
Okay.
Let's scrap sports.
Well,
because as long as there's sports, right, and there's emotions tied to it, and of course, with betting companies, there are people who have their money tied, there are people who are investing a lot of money in different aspects, with merchandising, with commercial activity, it means that there will always be emotions tied to these games. And it means that for people who have the tendency, right, to behave in such manners, then they will continue. So I think that there has to be a more conscious effort on a societal level as to how these things are dealt with. And I'll give you a very good example to back up my point. You go to Italy, unfortunately, in Italian football, there's a whole lot more brazenness in how, in quotes, racist, you know, do these things to players, to managers, to other people. Because you see, there's a continuous trend where the FIGC in Italy don't deal with these issues. In England, you see how something happens, then, you know, they tell the players, point out the person, if you see the person, the stewards will deal with the issue. I think that's the best they can do for now, because as long as it's just like people who go to the stadiums, drink a bottle of water, and leave the empty plastic, right, on the floor, even though there are trash cans at periodic intervals, it's because that's what the person does outside. If the person doesn't drop plastic cans, right, on the floor outside the stadium, there's a very high chance that when the person goes to watch a sports game, or a tennis game, or watch a race in F1, that the person will most likely not drop an empty plastic bottle on the floor. So again, I don't think that the solution is necessarily tied to sports. I think sports will eventually, if it's eradicated, be tied to whatever it is society does about it.
I think we talked about so much of how sports, I think in my own solution, I think that's what we should be talking about, solution now. It's high time we started educating some of the people, some of these racists. It's high time we started educating them, you know, let them realize that we all cannot be white-skinned. That there's black and there's white. And
is that
there's
something
no,
they don't know already?
They don't know, because it starts with, you know, some of them were born as kids and then they start growing up with this mentality. It's just inside their DNA that they feel that a white man is superior to a black person. Is wrong. I think sensitization education from nursery school, it should be incorporated into the schools in the UK, all over the world. Let people start knowing that because there's this mentality like your skin is not spite, and they are the first class citizens, then maybe we were mistakenly created or something. No, it's inside their mind, it's inside their soul. By the time you incorporate some of these things, starting with kids that were born maybe yesterday, today, we begin to teach them that this thing you think, so if we can imbibe them in school curriculum, that way to help. And then the same kids will grow up and become Chelsea fans and come to the stadium. The same kids will grow up and become sport fans. The same kids will grow up and open social media accounts. When they have that thing at the back of their mind that there is no difference or superiority or inferiority between black and white, I think we can curb it. It's about education. They don't know. Some of them, they just feel like, hey, you guys are black. Where are you coming from? Africa. Some of we hear Africa is not. I mean, it's just something they have in their minds. Mm-hmm. Sensitize them, educate them, let them know that, hey, we all cannot be. And what do they call it again? Melanin popping. Why are the black people dominating all over the sport? They cannot do without us. They need us. Basketball, we dominate. Tennis, we dominate. Football, we dominate. Rugby, I could go. Cricket, we are just everywhere. So what are we saying? People, sensitization, education, they don't know.
All right, this particular man who knows a thing, a lot more than a thing about racist abuse, that's the F1 champion, Lewis Hamilton.
Watching someone, you generally idolize them, you know, really just in terms of the quality of the driver they are, but what they're able to continuously do year on year and race on race and week on week with their team. I remember playing Michael on, it was a game called Grand Prix 2, I think it was, and I think there was a time I was playing you at one stage too. But, you know, just seeing his dominance for so long, I don't think anyone, and especially me, didn't imagine that I'd be anywhere near Michael in terms of records.
The voice of Lewis Hamilton speaking after achieving the record of equaling Michael Schumacher a couple of months ago. That was last year, actually. Last year or this year, Dizzy?
Last year.
Last year? Yeah, I think it was last
year. Yeah, last season. Yeah.
All right. But talking about F1, McLaren Mercedes have signed Brit driver George Russell until 2022, and he becomes Lewis Hamilton's partner for next season. The team have announced the 23-year-old Briton replaces Valtteri Bottas, who moves to Alfa Romeo from 2022. And that news was actually revealed on Monday. Now, Russell joins Mercedes after 3 years at Williams, in which he underlined his credentials for a seat in the top team. Speaking about that move, he just said, absolutely buzzing about the move. That's George Russell. I'm under no illusions as to the scale of the challenge. It's going to be a steep learning curve. Toto Wolff, the team principal of McLaren Mercedes, was speaking as to that announcement, and he says, George has been a winner in every racing category, and the past three seasons with Williams have given us a taste of what the future could hold for him. Now, the question is, of all the drivers that could be used to replace Valtteri Bottas, yeah, who moves to Alfa Romeo. I mean, why Russell? I know he underlined his credentials, I think, when he stood in for Hamilton a couple of months at the Bahrain Grand Prix, and he did quite a good job, some will say. And Hamilton actually did congratulate him and spoke extensively about him as well. And for the car he uses with the team he's leaving now, Williams, it's not the fastest of cars, Williams, and he's done, again, he don't try, some will say. But the question is, why Russell?
Well, it's Russell's time. That is the reason. It's Russell's time. They are thinking ahead, the Mercedes. You know, you haven't enjoyed that championship in the last 7 years. When you win, you want to continue winning. Winning is intoxicating. It's sweet to win. So they've looked ahead now. Hamilton is going to be 37 by next year. And someone is 23 waiting in the wings. He's not just waiting in the wings. He's paid his due. Mm. I mean, he started when he was 6 with the cutting process. Painstakingly has gone through, and not just that, the future of the F1 these days belongs to the youngsters. I mean, who would have expected that a certain Ocon audaciously, boldly, will go win the Hungaroring? No one gave him that. We've seen a certain Mad Max, I'll call him an ambitious pretender, up against perennial, his father in code knife, his father in the business, perennial champion, up against hey God, that boy is really, really doing great things. And then we have a Sergio Perez somewhere in the mix. We have Mick Schumacher coming through. Yes, he's not had a good season, but this is his first season. You can understand why he's struggling. So the future now belongs to the younger stars. Fernando Alonso is going to be 40 or even over 40 now. Kimi Raikkonen just, you know, said, hey, thank you very much for what I'm done. I'm going away from Formula One. So Mercedes are also looking to do what the rest of their counterparts are doing. Let's give the young stars time to bed in. Let's, you know, give them that moment. And of course, let's see. But for Russell, so many things to be talked about, Sam, when we come back.
Yes, certainly. We have to go on a break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about F1 and look at the race between Hamilton and Max Verstappen. Could we be seeing another moment, you know, for these two guys, like we saw with Nico Rosberg? The only one time Hamilton failed to win the championship in the last 7 years. Stick around, guys. We'll be right back on Game On with Femi and the gang on this dial, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Don't need anybody. You need Femi and the gang. You need Nigeria Info. That's the only person you need in this world. Well, I was going to say.
No, it's fine. You can say walai.
No, it's fine. I thought that was a swear word, a curse word.
No, it isn't.
It's a swear word. Swear, not curse.
I'm really tempted to say it, so you guys clear it up. I want to say it to complete what I'm saying.
Is it a swear word?
Maybe you should have just said
it. Yeah, exactly.
You're on the same side. But you know, you know what I was going to say. So anyway, guys, but this is good. Anthony, job knuckle. Job knuckle. You don't disappoint me.
Leave rock, bro.
Nah.
Rock is...
You know who Coldplay is?
I know, it's fine.
Enya.
I know, it's fine.
Kings of Leon. Should I go on?
It's fine.
Anyway, guys, welcome back to the show. Samuel Victor Akman here for you alongside Anthony, the voice. There's Adeze Michael, there's Chumanoli, and of course, there's Wale Agbede on the show. I hope you've been enjoying, because Wale, for one, has been really giving me lessons. Really, lessons.
What kind of lessons?
I think I'll join Chuma in attending that, registering for that, your class that I was talking about. I'll buy the phone when it comes out. Really, really excited
just
stuff on the show.
Money.
Huh?
Call me money.
Mm. All right, sure. It was never going to be free now. Let me Niger with it. I'm not considering the country, I'm just saying. But anyway, guys, we're talking F1 before the break as to the championship title race this season. We're speaking about George Russell, who moves over to McLaren Mercedes to join from Williams, and he will be joining Lewis Hamilton. Or coach, will you need Dan Lewis? I was going to ask you, Wale, now that we see the championship race, I mean, this past weekend, it was more about Max Verstappen. There was no way he was going to lose his home Grand Prix. There was no way that was going to happen. Massive crowd out there. And there was just a sea of yellow and orange. I'd be yellow and what's the color now of Dutch? Yeah, it was just all over. And Red Bull actually did win. And that means the ramifications of that win for Verstappen means he now tops the championship race. He's first. 3 points with 25 points. 3 points. Is it more than three? Ahead of Lewis Hamilton.
Yes, yeah, 3 points advantage.
3 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton. This one that I'm seeing is still behind. Yeah. So he's 3 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Valtteri Bottas in third. Paul Gasly in fourth. And Charles Leclerc, my favorite, just in fifth position. But there's something I want to touch on. The only time in the last couple of years we've seen Hamilton lose the championship race, a title more like, was to Nico Rosberg, the Iceman. Yeah, and that was quite painful for Lewis. But do you think Verstappen may just have taken that cloak and worn it and say, we may just have another Nico Rosberg moment for you, Lewis?
Yeah, well, maybe not as painful as Nico Rosberg, because they won the same thing.
Mm. Yeah.
And he accused the team sometimes of favoring
Lewis
over him with some team decisions in race, you know. So he's not his teammate, so maybe he'll be more receptive to Max Verstappen. But my money's still on Lewis Hamilton. I think that Hamilton, clearly the best driver on the grid every other weekend. I think that he also has the better car. Max Verstappen has matured a lot this season. And I think that's shown in the results that he's gotten. But he can as well go on to win the championship. That's the driver's title. But I'll still, you know, stick with Lewis Hamilton, mostly because he has the experience. And of course, because Mercedes have a better team. Because with F1, a lot of people think, oh, it's just about the quality of the driver or just the quality of the cars. Also the strategy. Especially, you know, led by Toto Wolff and the guys over there in the garage for for Mercedes.
Yeah.
I think that it just edges it a little bit. When to make pit stops, you know, when to get Valtteri Bottas, especially when they get the chance to lock out front row from qualifying. How they strategize to ensure that Max Verstappen, you know, and the likes of Pierre Gasly, Charles Leclerc, who have done really well this season, locked out behind Lewis Hamilton. I think that can play a really key role. I don't think that the other Red Bull has had enough of a good season to give the guys who run strategy for Red Bull enough to compete with Toto Wolff. I think that Bottas is so good a wingman that, again, I still have to stick with Lewis Hamilton. Quickly, just to chip in with George Russell. Okay. He's been really good. And Mercedes have been on him for 5 years now. When he was in GP3, he won when he was in GP3. That's like the third kid of racing. When he got to Formula 2, he won the Formula 2 in the only year he spent there. And then he signed on to Williams. Williams is like a sister.
Feeder ground?
Yeah, for Mercedes. So it's actually been in the system. It is not...
It's for, subsidiary, I should say. Fidel Grant is disrespectful.
Yeah,
is
for those who know Mercedes, I don't think people are necessarily surprised. I think this has always been in the offing. And quick start, at Williams, he's gone through 50 qualifying races since he joined them. He has beat the other car 50 times. He hasn't finished behind
clean record
the other car. You know, and he's driven with some really good drivers. Daniel Kvyat 2 years ago and some other really good drivers. So I think he deserves it and absolutely deserves his place at Mercedes.
Quickly, Sam, let me quickly talk about the Max and Hamilton battle. You know, I don't really usually get to sit on this side again because I need to present the show. I no longer analyze.
I think I did it on purpose.
I missed analyzing, actually, Sam. But I think for Hamilton, he's been here before. Like back in 2014, back in 2018, when it looked like Sebastian Vettel was going to run away with it, but then they imploded. Hamilton had to, you know, do what Hamilton had. And one good thing about him is that in the second part of the season, he becomes even more dangerous. And the next two races are looking like is the Mercedes dominant ground. I'm talking about Monza in Italy this Sunday, and of course Sochi, Russia. Although Sochi, there was a tweak last year when Max Verstappen, he had to, you know, take advantage of that 5 penalty stop to, you know, win that race. But the next two races, watch out for the Mercedes. I don't know if they're going to capitulate, but Sunday's race was so difficult for Hamilton. He came out to say, man, I tried to catch this boy, but no fit. The boy too fast.
The boy was just too fast.
But I think he needs help. Hamilton, this as it stands now, yes, he used to try before, ever since they brought the new hybrid era, he was good. But then, you know, when you're so dominant, it looks like everything you do, you know, is just there. But now he needs to even do more. What he's done so far this season is not good enough. He needs help. Why I mean that he needs help? He needs help from their strategy. I'm talking about his team now, the Mercedes, their strategy, their operational method. Last Sunday, for instance, I felt Bottas would have helped him. But Mad Max was just all alone. Sergio Perez was somewhere in 11th. I thought that would have been a good combination for Bottas to counter, to protect his teammates to go on. But then it was difficult. When Bottas had the opportunity to counter, he made a big mistake and then just left Hamilton all, you know, to do the job alone. So strategy-wise, I felt Mercedes would have pitted Hamilton on Sunday, maybe around the 30-something lap, but they didn't do that. They allowed it much, much later when it looked like Mad Max was already, you know, going to so a lot of needs to be done strategy-wise, operational-wise. Mercedes will have to help Hamilton do it. It's no longer magical. Mad Max is somewhere waiting in the wings. The pretentious and the pretender ambitious man.
All right, and as we wrap up the conversation on F1, I was also going to ask, McLaren Mercedes, faster car, Red Bull, not so bad, but which is going to be pivotal as we hit the home stretch? The quality of the driver, these two, Mad Max and of course Lewis, are fantastic drivers, but the quality of the drivers or the car itself, do you think the fact that the Mercedes car is, you know, faster may just swing it back the way of Lewis Hamilton, Anthony?
Well, I mean,
because mentally, I don't know if I'm the only one who picks up on that. He looks like,
just for the record, Sam.
Yeah.
Red Bull is actually faster.
Is it?
This season.
Yeah, they have the fastest car.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Red Bull have the fastest car.
Absolutely.
Since when?
This season.
They had, you know, a lot of tweak to their engine prior to the start of the new season.
So it does favor Mad Max.
Max is a fantastic young driver who have been knocking on the door, you know, for years. He's probably smashed all the youngest in quote records in the Formula One. He's done almost every of his, you know, achievements as the youngest, you know. So he's a fantastic driver. But one of the things that have given him an edge this season is, you know, the speed of that car. In fact, some say it's about 3.5 seconds faster than Mercedes. So this season he's been really lucky with that. But also, you can't take anything away from, you know, the never say die attitude of Max and his desperate and also very aggressive approach to his race, which have really kept him up there. But you know, as we speak, the gap is cutting. It's closing up, which is a big issue. It's closing up, and you know, Hamilton has built experience over the years, and surely he will be saying to himself,
"I've been here before."
Yeah, we just need to correct one or two things, and I can deal with this boy. I mean, Hamilton is a surreal driver, and his perfection. It's just that this season, things hasn't particularly gone his way, and there have been some mistakes, and all of that. But he would have his eye on the next two races. Monza does look like home, you know, for him. So we could see him spring up something special. But I mean, for Max, 7 wins out of 13 races. It's beautiful for Max, who, you know, at some point went on 19 Grand Prix without winning a race. And despite that fact, he was still in the mix of the conversation of people who could potentially take off. Some are saying this is his time, you know, that time for him to really take over that batting from Lewis have come. But I fear, because he can be naughty sometimes, he can be hot-headed, he's not sometimes the coolest, so Hamilton might use that over him. But I think they need to continue to build on the strength of the speed that they have, you know, with that Red Bull, and see where it takes them. While he talked about the quality of the team, Valtteri Bottas now know he's leaving, he probably want to, you know, leave on a high, so he needs to step up. If Hamilton needs to really do well, Bottas needs to step up. And for Russell, I think it's expected. You know, Wally talked about the growth of Russell over the years. And, you know, yes, he's with, in quote, an uncompetitive car. But nonetheless, a lot of professionals, the likes of Alonso says, I think he said that every time I see this kid, I see something special. You know, the lead engineer of Williams have talked about him, despite the fact he's with a car that is, in quote, far from the likes of, you know, the McLarens. He finds a way to send a message every time he's on the grid. His composure, I was reading something, he hardly makes mistake. He's level-headed, and you feel like he's that kind of a, you know, driver who could really take over the new age of what Mercedes is building going forward. And they're priming him up with the legend himself, Lewis Hamilton.
And Hamilton has said, hey, show respect.
But he certainly has.
Hamilton already sent out a message. Hey, Russell, you got to show respect.
When Hamilton made his debut in F1,
yeah,
did he?
Alongside Fernando Alonso.
Did he show respect
with McLaren?
That's different.
So it's actually new territory for Hamilton, because so I think that now he's having to race with a driver who
wants to win as well.
People actually think can win.
No longer compliant.
But the structure of Mercedes is a wing driver. And I believe going forward,
I don't think so, Tony.
No.
The structure of Mercedes is not a wing driver.
Bottas is the wing to Hamilton.
Nico Rosberg was
not
the wing
exactly. That is not the structure of Mercedes.
I am saying currently what they run currently, Bottas is the wingman of Hamilton. Yes or yes?
I think that one final point I'll make as regards the issue is, don't forget also that the new engine specs come into play next season.
Exactly.
They were pushed from this year because
to the next year.
Last year. So that means that this hybrid era that Mercedes has dominated, we don't know what's happening yet, right? But a lot of these teams are planning already for what's
next
happening
season.
Who knows? Maybe Russell is the X factor who comes in and is more comfortable.
And again, remember, the new era. At some point, Valtteri has become so laid back. You know, he got so used to that wing that it becomes even a problem. That's why they're pushing him away. Mercedes wants a situation where, I remember one of the races, a couple of races ago, Max was, you know, sleeping on the bicycle. He removed his foot off the gas. Sergio Perez went ahead to win the race. So that is what Mercedes want. If Mr.
Every
A
time there's been an opportunity,
exactly,
Bottas hasn't grabbed.
Exactly. So I don't think they're not structured to be a wing. No. They've always wanted their two drivers to be competitive.
Just for the records, Lewis Hamilton will always be priority in 50-50 calls. As far as Mercedes is concerned, that's a no-brainer.
Is that not the smart thing to do?
Obviously.
And they've looked at it.
And Bottas will be the man who oftentimes will defend.
But you know that, Anthony. Let's not make it an absolute conversation. Because don't forget also that after Sebastian Vettel started struggling at Ferrari.
Obviously, Charles.
And Kimi Raikkonen left, right? When Charles Leclerc came, Vettel was still the main driver on 50-50 calls. But it was clear that Charles Leclerc was doing way better than Sebastian Vettel, and Leclerc started to get the advantage.
Absolutely. agree.
Again, we're going into a new era in F1 next season. When it starts, right? If George Russell finds a way to go out of Hamilton in some kind of magical...
Mercedes will not mind. Mercedes will not mind. All right. It's all about winning.
All right, now we go find trouble. Ada, you have your crew for this weekend.
They'll have to pay me to bring them on my show.
Chuma, now only me and you did this place. Now let's get back to...
They don't talk and finish.
Our phone lines are going crazy. I think we've ignored that for too long, as well as WhatsApp. We'll get back to football conversation very, very shortly. Should we do WhatsApp or take the phone lines? We've done the phone lines before. So let's take WhatsApp. Messages. Good evening, Femi and the gang. So we play against Kevet poorly, and we should just close our mouths and enjoy the victory, Abby. Okay. Shane and Brazil then play against. When we continue playing like this, World Cup proper, we will lose all our games. It's a crime. Is it a crime to play good football and win? Ibanga Namso, na my name. All right, Ibanga. If you ask me, I wonder who I go ask. Hi, sports guys.
Yeah, so my
Now she could get the better answer. Congrats to Super Eagles and Nigeria at large. I rate them 7 over 10. But we need to work more on our defense, goalkeeping, and the attack. Generally, we need to work on the whole team now, because we can be praying for miracles in our qualification.
We can't.
I guess you wrote can. Yeah. I guess you're trying to say can't. Up Niger. Please, guys, when you send us messages, do well to leave us your name and location. Timmy from Ikotu does that. And he says, good evening, everyone. Our match could have ended as a disappointment, so I'm happy about securing maximum points. I honestly think we cannot divorce our current team play from our destiny as future champions. The day the wind of fortune doesn't reach us, we must be ready to grab our win. We are in desperate need of more creative and clinical striking department. All right. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Okay, this one too long now. Olu from Surulere, I do see your message. Say we shouldn't worry how we get the points. What happens if we play pretty football and don't get the points you say? Thank you very much for your message. Tyus from Aja says, it's the same goal that is being secured or that's been scored by other teams. If we had lost, people would say, I knew it. We know Sabi ball. Now we won and they're still saying that they are not satisfied. We are interesting people. We certainly are. That's the joy about it. Diverse opinions. My name is Joel from A Papa. Nice show and top-notch analysis. But why did that... can't remember his name, not finish his analysis on African coaches compared to European counterparts after the commercial break. I guess he was talking about Wale. Apologies, apparently. Wale. When Zeta calls, things fly off your head. Because that's where Atalari comes from. Fadji, 8 over 10 for Super Eagles. If you need entertainment, then go to Las Vegas. On New Camp.
That was below the belt. Stop that.
Well, he's right now. I mean, sophistry in football is long gone and died with Brazilian team of 1982. Anything you see, better take. Negative sentiment should be directed to, okay, that is where my bus stop reached. That remaining that you said, that'll be my mouth, then go hear him. All right, more messages here. The messages are coming in their numbers. Nice job, Eagles. Please, can you tell me the starting lineup? Well, I already read that at the start of the show. We're talking about Nigerian Super Eagles, not Djibouti. That's not the correct spelling of Djibouti, by the way. Show some respect to the team. We should have been good football against Cape Verde. Ojo from Ajegunle. All right. Good evening, gang. Please note that next time I tune. Okay. All right. Waid. I see your message. Thank you very much for sending it. Good evening, guys. My name is Rally at from Ikorodu. One for the Super Eagles today, but please, Raw should tell the boys to make use of their set pieces, especially the corner kicks, because we have close to 7 corners, but it wasn't effective
Sam, I saw pretty much maybe one of the best corner kicks in the last 4 years today. Ahmed Musa's corner. No, I had to adjust myself. Is this the Super Eagles? I mean, I think there was just two corners that were actually sublime deliveries.
We had about 7.
That's what I'm saying. I think out of all those 7, you know, from left and right, 2 or 3 corners from him, I was like, no, this is good. This is good. So, I don't know. We have to work. Too much to be done. in that set piece focus of the team.
True. All right, then. So clearly a sentiment I shared by Anthony, the voice. More messages here. We'll take two more and then we go back to the phone lines. Good evening, guys. My own best African representative at the World Cup should be Nigeria, South Africa, Tunisia, Egypt, and Senegal. Nice job you guys are doing. Adeze Adehelo, and shout out to Serafina too, Banabas Uba from Bariga. Thank you very, very much. A final message for now. This one says, where'd the message go? One game, guys. This type of performance is naturally okay. Super Eagles performance on a bad day is naturally the Super Eagles performance on a bad day. The bad day we played poorly, therefore we shouldn't celebrate anything. Gennett Raw is gradually approaching countries that will expose his technical inabilities to push Nigeria beyond just the ordinary. All right, Olaide Cruz, thank you for your message. Back to the phone lines, 0700-993-993-993. Good evening to you.
Hello, good evening, Samuel.
Yeah, finally you called back. Glad to hear from you, Friday.
Yeah, this Friday from Iwelere.
Go ahead, Friday.
Yeah, see, the other time you people were talking about Africa coaches, comparing them with the Euro people. Hello, Samuel.
Hey, it wasn't actually a comparison. We're just saying...
Yeah, I know. I understand.
All right.
But our administrator, are they as good as the European administrator?
That's another...
You know,
can a dog give birth to a lion?
Lie, at all.
Oh, you people should praise our coaches. The environment they are working under, it's so difficult for them to perform, Samuel. It's so easy. Look at Keshi. Look at he took Nigeria to the second round of the World Cup with all the problems he was facing then. See, this is our coach. The last time we went to the World Cup, we did not qualify for the second round. And he was still being praised, pampered. But the coach that took us to the second round of the World Cup, what did he do to him? He was humiliated. He was sad.
This life no balance now.
This life no balance. Is it because we are talking? Adeze was saying the other time that it's time time we teach, we start teaching all these white people in their school that there are also black. Look at the way we worship black white men in our country, yeah, in this country, man. The way we worship white men. Do you blame the white people praising themselves? I don't, me personally, I don't praise them. I don't blame them somewhere.
All right.
We humiliate our people at the essence of the white man. We praise them. People praise them. A white man will offend you. You will call police. Police will tie me.
All right.
No, forget. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much for calling in.
Say
Friday.
Say no to racism.
All right, that's the most important thing. All right. Good evening to you. Welcome to Game On. Sorry about that. Do well to call back. It's 0700-99. Okay, you know the number. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Hi, what's your name?
Jesu Lopeye.
Welcome, Jesu. I know it. You will talk now.
AKA Soskacha.
Jesu, just be honest for once.
AKA Soskacha.
Be honest for once.
Since we've turned Nigeria Super Eagles to celebrating mediocrity, so I need to be honest. So it is against Cape Verde we should be celebrating. Is Cape Verde the team?
Yes.
In fact, this man, I've said this times without number, he's not the right man for United. Sorry.
Soskacha.
Your bad,
the spirit of Soskacha. The spirit of Soskacha
is affecting
you. Affecting you.
Wahala. He's man for Super Eagles. I have said it so many times. He's the same with Soskacha. So, no matter what it is, Super Eagles can never win anything with this man.
All right.
Anything with Soskacha.
Okay. At this point, Gennett Raw left the group. That's simple.
Soskacha. What is this guy done to you?
We'll take two more before we head on a break. Good afternoon to you. Good evening to you. See, Jesu, don't confuse me. Good evening to you.
A wonderful evening to you guys.
Hi there. Good evening.
Yeah, my name is Steven John.
Welcome, Steven.
For me, Gennett Raw impressed at all. Half on time. My own main problem is the substitution. Waiting until the 70th minute, even when you know that the players are one or two are not doing very well, you have to wait the 70th minute. before you make your competition. If I'm to be a punter, always better second half first up. And that one is a banker when it comes to Super Eagles.
Right.
Because he always reach you that time before it came.
That's when he thinks it's best to make a sub.
Over
now.
Two legs now, see the games we play. We can cannot bombard them with goals. And we know that it's goals that make us that in the game. So I don't know if Gennaro, people will say we are complaining. It's their problem, sir.
Is this not the complaint, Stephen John? Stephen, wait. Is this not the complaint? Is it a request?
What?
This thing you are saying, is it not a complaint?
I'm complaining.
Is there people who say they are complaining? Are you not complaining? You're complaining. Is there people who are saying you're complaining?
No, you don't get. People are complaining that we are complaining that Gennaro is.
He's complaining.
I am complaining that you are complaining that people are complaining.
We are all complaining.
Come on, manager like that.
All right.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for calling. I do get your point. Good evening.
Some Memphis Epe. Netherlands.
All right. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Hi. Good evening. What's your name?
James. I'm Edibo.
Welcome, James.
The coach, General. He's making late changes. He will not change on time.
Okay.
Immediately after the beginning of the second
all right.
half, he's supposed to make changes.
Okay.
So we delay it. We sit down. That's the mistake he did at the World Cup against Argentina. He always waits time to change.
All right. All right. We'll send a message across to Rod to always change.
Sam.
Yeah?
Since I watch football, have you ever heard of a manager who... whose fault, whose flaw was not substituting early enough or substituting too early?
I've heard it now.
Before Gennaro, did you ever hear it?
Nah, I've never, but I've heard it now. Things change. They say change is the constant
thing.
I asked
because it's quite amusing. I think people are actually hanging on to straws because it's winning games. So since he's not losing games, right? Let's say something. Nigeria lost against Argentina. I mean, did people really expect Nigeria to win? I mean, you know, I think that, again, the expectations are quite exaggerated, honestly.
All right. Everybody in this part of the country is a coach, I think.
You can substitute your team, right? The odds will still be in favor of Argentina.
Exactly. You could even borrow Argentina's bench and put in your team.
Quickly.
Argentina that struggled to qualify, they didn't beat us.
No.
Quickly. That was a different case, Juan.
There's a blot to what you just said. Yes, substitution may not be when you throw in someone or when you take someone out, may not be huge in games, but the earlier
no,
that some games...
Huge. That's what I'm saying.
The earlier that in some games,
Hold that thought. We'll go on a break. We'll come back and talk some more. This is Game. Remember, we are champions at least for today because we defeated Cape Verde by 2-1. So stop complaining. Appreciate what Gennaro has done for you and your national team. That is my advice to you. Yes.
Innocent advice.
I mean, what else? What else?
I mean, nobody says you should celebrate.
No, just be happy.
I mean,
be happy. Like one of the messages I read.
They go block you for street one night. They go block you for street.
See, my neighbors are going to roast me.
Now you're the supporter. Now you have
me. Hey, you don't thought your show was gonna rush, you know? It's gonna be like that. But guys, let's just enjoy the moment. I mean, some countries haven't won today, and you could only imagine the criticisms the manager and the team will be receiving. But Nigeria won two matches. We won, and so we should celebrate. I mean, there's so many things to be happy for. By the way, the Super Eagles have become 2 million naira richer. All of those boys that played that game.
20, you mean?
I think the airline company, was it 20? 20. What am I saying? What can they give to me? It's 20 million naira on arrival. They will be getting that sum from the carrier of the team that took them all the way to Cape Verde. I'm not going to do free publicity for them. Anyway, back to football stories. Game on right here on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Samuel Victor Ackman in the building alongside Adeze Michael Chumanoli, Anthony the Voice, a.k.a. Dizzle, a.k.a. Fine Boy, a.k.a. Freshest, and of course, Wale Agbede on the broadcast.
No, it's been...
just simply Wally Agbede, that's all.
All right, it is what it is, like I always love to say. But let's go back to football and talk about the World Football Governing Body. They are called FIFA. But anyway, we hear FIFA has opened the disciplinary proceedings. I was going to bite my tongue there. They've launched disciplinary actions against Brazil and Argentina after the events that saw their World Cup qualifying match on Sunday abandoned. Now, the match was halted after just kicking off, after Brazilian health officials objected to the participation of three Argentine players. They say broke quarantine rules. Now, FIFA said their move follows analysis of the match reports from Sao Paulo venue for that game, and no date for the rearranged fixture has been set. Brazil authorities, health authorities more like, had said four England-based players for Argentina had to quarantine upon arrival due to COVID-19 measures. They actually didn't mention any of those players, but we believe they include the duo of Emiliano Buendia and Emiliano Martinez of Aston Villa, and Tottenham duo of Giovanni Lo Celso and Christian Romero, who, by the way, according to Spurs, they've said both players will be punished for their action breaking COVID-19 rules. Now, the match, like we said, and they're just 5 minutes into the game and by the Brazilian health authorities. But FIFA opens proceedings against both countries in Brazil and Argentina. Chuma, we know the circumstances that surrounded, you know, players leaving their club sides and going for international duty. Some of them actually wanted to go. They were stopped by their clubs. The league pleaded with the government to allow these players go and, you know, break, just relax some of the rules, but that wasn't agreed upon. Moving forward, because the Aston Villa chief executive, Christian Porzlo, was actually speaking, and he said events surrounding the match will now make clubs incredibly nervous when it comes to releasing their players for international duty. In not too distant time, we'll have another international break. COVID-19 hasn't gone away. It's still here. It's now our neighbor. We can't do anything about it. What do you think should make this call as to playing, going away on international break? Because on the one hand, like I said, the players want to go. They want to represent their countries. The clubs are saying, we want to allow you to go. But then again, these quarantine rules, because Emiliano and Cole will now miss Aston Villa's game this weekend because they have to go and quarantine, I think, somewhere in Croatia. But who should make this call? The government, the clubs, the players, or the, who did I leave out?
FIFA, no.
Or FIFA itself as a body.
Well, by the way, Turkey have just scored a goal, a consolation goal for them. Netherlands were decimating them by 6-0. He's now 6-1. Liverpool fans should be shaky because Virgil is holding on to his right ankle. There should be some video for Virgil at this moment. Could just be issues for the Dutch side. But yeah, responding to you directly, you know, it's a twisted situation. It's quite a difficult place to find ourselves in. And sadly, again, it's because of the whole COVID-19 debacle. I wouldn't boldly say FIFA now, because if I say FIFA and we're in the situation where we find ourselves now, where an independent nation, a nation with its own sovereignty, as the UK is, says, hey, if you leave our country and go to certain territories, when you come back, you have to quarantine, you're not bigger than the government, then that will still lead to an issue, because these clubs, it's a tight schedule. I know there was one sometime last week, someone called in and said FIFA could argue if these players go to these red zones, when they return, postpone the match for that football club until after 10 days. But you've forgotten that the calendar is so cumbersome. So you don't have time to be postponing things unnecessarily. I would think that the honest truth is the guys who should have the ultimate power here should be the clubs, because they spend more money on these players. Having said so, some of these clubs can become selfish. I personally had my own issues with Liverpool and their handling of Mohamed Salah. I felt that, hey, teams don't qualify for Olympic Games every day. And when Egypt qualified and Salah declared his interest to represent his nation because he dreamt of what someone like Mikel enjoyed, for example, winning bronze at the Olympics, what Neymar enjoyed winning gold with Brazil in 2016. Finally, Brazil got gold in the football competition at the Olympics, and he wanted to go, and Liverpool said, we will not let you go. It's a different ball game. The FA appealed to Liverpool, the Egyptian FA. Liverpool still said no, because we'll let him go for the AFCON. And then this COVID-19 issue came again, and the same Liverpool are saying, no, we're not letting you go because of COVID-19. And I felt that was too selfish from Liverpool, because if stopped him from the Olympics, I beg, allow him play his qualifying fixture so he can also play at the AFCON for his nation earlier next year. So yeah, that's the situation. Having, again, you know, it feels like I'm dancing. It's difficult to, I like staying one place when these arguments come up, but this one, it had me, because it's tough. If I say it's FIFA, then it's also unfair to these clubs because they spend more money on the players. If I say it's the clubs, then the clubs are unfair because sometimes they are too selfish because of their own interests. But in summary, guys, since I have to stay one place in this gist, let the clubs have half the power, but let the clubs have a sense of reasoning with the FA sometimes.
All right, because as it stands, the one party that is at the receiving end is national teams.
Yeah,
because
true.
You know, you get true. To play like we did, qualifiers without the best, you know, terms of quality. But also sticking with FIFA, UEFA president Alexander Seferin has rejected the idea of holding a biennial World Cup, and that's changing it from 4 years to 2 years. He says it will dilute the tournament itself. Now, FIFA, we know, is holding a feasibility study into the biennial men's and women's World Cup following a proposal by the Saudi Arabian Football Federation in May. And that consultation process is led by, you know who? Arsene Wenger of Arsenal. The former, not of Arsenal. The former Arsenal manager. Speaking in front of quite a number of club representatives at the General Assembly of the European Clubs Association in Geneva, Seferin said holding it every 2 years, that's taking a quote from him, will lead to more randomization, less legitimacy, and unfortunately dilutes the World Cup itself. What a good way to speak English. I should start learning from this man. Wenger, chief executive, chief of global football development at FIFA, also said back in May that the World Cup and European Championship played every 2 years. He wanted to see it play every 2 years, and FIFA should kick out all the rest, in his words. Meanwhile, earlier on today, former England players Terry, that's John Terry, Michael Owen, former Brazilian striker Ronaldo, and Germany midfielder Sami Khedira were all among a group of players who spoke to Wenger in Doha concerning this one. And they're actually saying, you, like Chuma did say, you are killing the players with too many games. We know next year the World Cup is going to hold, the Nations Cup is going to hold. There's a Champions League to play, there are league matches to be played. UEFA Nations League is also going to be played. So there's just so many matches. And it seems, again, the players this time around on the receiving end of this whole situation for FIFA. Now, my question is, FIFA president Gianni Infantino actually says, if I say it would make sense, let's play this thing every 2 years. And people are saying you're only looking at the financial aspect of it. There's the physical, you know, part which we spoke about on the part of the players. But what makes a biennial tournament really terrible for football? That's the question now. Because it seems like we are, again, back to that situation where nobody really wants to come out and do the right thing. This one is pushing it this one to take the blame, and this one says you take the blame. The players have been completely neglected in all of this. So what makes, now making a case for this part of the divide, what makes a biennial World Cup very, very terrible for football?
Yeah, well, I think that, like the World Cup, right, is, I say probably because people have different opinions, it's probably football's most prized product, right? I think that the World Cup enjoys a lot of visibility, a lot of viewership, a lot of, you know, merchandising, brand endorsements. From a brand perspective, so there's what we call a SWOT analysis, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats to a brand. If you do a SWOT analysis of the World Cup, you'll find out that one of the strengths, right, of the product being the FIFA World Cup is the fact that it's played every 4 years. It sounds really trivial, but the fact that it is not as, like Jeffrey said, it's not as randomized as something that, oh, we can play it today and then in 2 years' time we're back here again, you know, we're competing for this trophy. The mere fact that's been like that for so many years, only two times has it not been played.
During the World War.
So it means that the product, which is the FIFA World Cup, has built up a reputation, right, that adds to the value of the competition. So when you turn it to 2 years, I think that it creates a devaluation in terms of, because if I don't put money in it today, right, from a brand perspective, I can as well do that in 2 years' time, right? And then I will be hoping that I will get as much viewership and conversion as I would have, right, if it was in the next 4 years. But that would be wrong, because from a viewer's point of view, right, if I know that, oh, I watched these guys 2 years ago, right, I'm going to watch these guys again in the next 2 years, it just sort of reduces the value a bit. And I think that that's the biggest impediment. Also, on the part of the players, I have been a very big advocate of less games. the Champions League is going to be having more games in a couple of years.
Expanded format. Right?
The cup competitions in this in different countries in Europe and Africa, they keep expanding, right? These cup competitions. In the UEFA Nations League, just like 2-3 years ago, international weeks usually have two games. Now they have three games. Because they have to play qualifiers for the Euros, they'll play qualifiers for the World Cup. Now they have to play the UEFA Nations League, right? These guys are playing more and more games every
But that buttresses what Wenger is saying. All these Nations League, Carabao Cup, scrap them out and let's just have the major tournaments. The leagues, international breaks, World Cup, and then the CONMEBOL, AFCON, you know, the major nations.
Okay, so Wenger is suggesting that those competitions should be scrapped.
Taken out. So
yeah,
we can
but
focus
the only
on
competition that was scrapped
ones.
Is the Nations League.
Yeah, all these, and for because leagues, he's also you're suggesting these leagues take out all these extra cup competitions, the Coppa Italia, the all those whatever, Segunda Coppa,
yeah,
Coppa,
yeah,
whatever
but,
in Spain.
But what's the, what, okay, for instance, the FA Cup is the oldest cup competition.
Well, you could leave
world.
The FA Cup, but again,
okay, so,
the Carabao Cup takes out.
So where do we draw the line?
Well,
where do we draw the line? Because, for instance, the Copa del Rey is not as lucrative as the FA Cup.
Yes.
Because the brands are stronger than each other, right? So, if you're saying, oh, in England, we're only going to scrap the League Cup, we're going to leave the FA Cup. But in Spain, we're going to scrap the Copa del Rey. Where do we draw the line? So, I think that it is something that can be fine-tuned. I'm not averse to change, right? I am very receptive to change. That's why the European Super League, I wanted to listen to the ideas. I thought it could be fine-tuned. I wasn't against it, right? So Wenger might eventually fine-tune his ideas and then I'll buy. But at the moment, just saying, oh, let's grab the other competitions and play World Cup and Euros every 2 years. It doesn't make sense to me. Look at the Africa Cup of Nations. Look at the Copa America this year. Argentina won the Copa America, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things that people have used to devalue the essence of Messi winning the Copa America is, hey, but you guys have played four in the last 7 years, right? Imagine if someone goes on to win the World Cup and then it's like, oh, when Ronaldo won the World Cup or when Zidane won the World Cup, he hadn't participated in the World Cup for 4 years, right? Then someone comes and says, oh, I played the World Cup 2 years ago and then I played this year and then I played the next year. It's just, you. There's no empirical manner to which you can analyze the what's it called now? The demerits, you know, of playing a biennial competition. I don't think doesn't sell to the football world. For me, at the moment, again, like I said, they might sell a better idea, a more packaged idea that I might buy, but
for
right
now,
I think it's just
working.
Just too many games.
All right, then. Interesting as to that one. Wait to see how it develops, but this is an idea proposed by the rich people somewhere in the Far East,
and just
they're sitting
Sam,
there. Yeah?
The same people who antagonized the people whose money actually run football and wanted to create a European Super League, these people who are proposing to
yeah, this idea.
They are the ones who told the fans to fight against those people that they are creating that competition because of money. Now they are trying to create more competition.
Flope will just be somewhere laughing.
You know, it's just hypocrisy.
No, but you know, on the broader spectrum, you know, there are positives of this. However, you know, like you said, it's subject to a lot of modification. The idea is still very vague in terms of the realism. You know, FIFA is also saying that they would come to the fans, they would also come to the players on this issue. So
they never come to the fans.
No. Why?
They're just posturing. That's what they always do.
No. There is the fans. European Association, okay. You know, their platforms, which of course the fans can air their views from. So you have a feeling there'll be a sampling. But you know, the issue of having more nations get to host the World Cup, and you know, you can move across board to host the World Cup, are being, you know, a conversation. Now, this issue of even, you know, making the World Cup every 2 years didn't just start now. It started back in the late 90s. The likes of Is this Sepp Blatter now? Was one of the progenitors of this idea. However, they have been looking at, you know, several issues which seem to always take it back to square one. Also, the conversation of having sponsors. Trust me, I do not think that if the World Cup is staged every 2 years, there will be lack of sponsors. Never.
No, I didn't say there will be lack of sponsors.
I'm just saying
convert as much as they would every 4 years.
Well, that's subjective too, because we cannot particularly say the likes of the Saudis and the Chinese. Some of these guys who are becoming, you know, who are climbing that food chain are saying, listen, we have got the funds to pump into this, to make it work. As Vega said, you watch the Champions League every year. You love it. So why can't we have the World Cup every 2 years and people will still love it? Now, he's prioritizing the quality of the competition over the regularity of the competition. If it's well packaged, if it gives other countries the opportunity to also compete, because the more regular it is, the more, will I say, easier it will be for some countries to once, you know, just get into that mix. So, I don't know. It's a vague idea, but there's certain positives which, well, I can't particularly sit here and say it will work across board.
The only positive in all of this is that money is ruling football now, and that is the drive, basically. And they feel the principal actors, which are the players, at the end of the day, we even earn more money. They feel, okay, if we give them more money, they'll go ahead and play the football. Wenger has taken his Arsenal mindset to the world at large.
Economics,
making money, and of course, maybe expanding within now, I do not know. But then, at the end of the day, it's about money.
You cannot say that's the only positive, that part I will.
Because
African nations, African CAF buy into this sentiment. Why?
Of course, Asia.
African countries will have a chance to qualify more often for the World Cup.
Yeah.
And they believe that the exposure will help these guys do better in World Cups to come.
And the expansion of the World Cup also.
So I agree with all the points. Again, I don't think that there are no positives. Mm. I think that there surely will be, right? These are really intelligent people. But the point about, we watch the Champions League every season, why can't we watch international competitions every 2 years? I think the difference, and I think this gap in information or knowledge, it was exposed during the European Super League conversations.
Mm.
The monies that run football, right, is mostly in club football. The guys whose monies control our passion, the reason why we're here tonight, right, are the billionaires who spend money in club football. The economic rights to these footballers are owned by club owners, not national teams. That's why earlier I wanted to chip in with the releasing players for national teams. Clubs own the economic rights to footballers. So if Liverpool says Mo Salah isn't going to play for the national team in the Olympics, that is it. That is where football is right now. The moment we have allowed investors, businessmen, to use their money to run the game, we have to accept that this is one of the byproducts of that, right? Mm. Now, with the Champions League, right, which I think has been a lot more interesting than the World Cup in recent years, I think that is because there's a whole lot more diversity. There's a whole lot more unpredictability. When you're going to the World Cup with Brazil, the next World Cup, right, there's going to be Neymar, Gabriel Jesus, maybe Thiago Silva, right, maybe Richarlison. In 2 years, you don't know who's going to be at Paris Saint-Germain. Last season, nobody knew Messi and Sergio Ramos were going to be there. It creates a different dynamic with club football and the money that is available to it.
All right. Let's just, because of want of time, we could sit here and we could talk about this all day. But this is the final 10 minutes of the show. And let's talk about one man. It seems like it's a party mode back at Old Trafford, because they are celebrating. In the final few days of the transfer market, it was all about Cristiano Ronaldo. And now it seems like it's glory, glory back at Manchester United. Certainly they do. You think I was going to let you play for it?
I go wound joy you, brother.
No, Ronaldo, ever since he signed, he's returned back to Manchester United for his first day of training at Carrington Training Complex after rejoining the club from Juventus in the summer transfer window. He trained on Tuesday for the first time since returning back to Manchester United, since leaving the club 12 years ago for Real Madrid in a then record £18 million transfer deal. United's new number 7 spoke to the manager. This is how his day went. He spoke to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer before being introduced to the players who didn't make it to international duty. Then he partook in his first training session with his new teammates. The 36-year-old could now play for Manchester United against Newcastle this weekend, or play in the Champions League away at Young Boys. Now, we know Ronaldo spent 3 years and one match at Juventus.
You said what?
3 years and one match.
Okay.
3 years and one match at Juventus between 2018 and 2021. Two league titles he won, one Coppa Italia, one Italian Super Cup, two Serie A Player of the Year awards, one top scorer in the Serie A. He had 134 appearances for Juve, the old lady, and scored 101 goals for them. The question now is, returning to Manchester United, was Cristiano Ronaldo a success at Juventus? He was brought in to win the Champions League. He failed to do that in three appearances. They got to the quarterfinal once and then the second round, or quarterfinal twice and the second round once, where they were knocked out. Disappointingly, never made it to the semifinals with Cristiano Ronaldo. Was he a success at AC Michael?
Honestly, when I saw this in your show prep, it was part of the prep that made me smile. You know, I like some of talking points.
Unfortunately, we only have like 3 minutes.
Yes, quickly. Ororo Ronaldo.
Well, what?
Ororo.
Then you don't over here.
Why? Like, you've not heard it before.
Sounded like one foreign guy. One guy who's British. Like what?
Like, don't mind Sam. Sam to the phone. Like, he's not in Nigeria. That's his truth.
Let me keep up with you.
Well, I think for the player himself, it will be foolhardy if I pin the blame solely on him why they could not win the Champions League. I mean, yes, he did not win the Champions League, but that doesn't take away the impact he made. This is someone that is 36 going on 28. I think that would be the new phrase I'll be using. He scored 101 goals in 134 appearances. And let me quickly dissect the fixtures. Ajax, Porto, and of course...
Young Boys.
Lyon? Lyon. These were the teams on paper you'd say they would have beaten. Some of those, if you look at the game plan in the fixture, it looked like they allowed him alone to win the game for them. I remember when he came through with one when he scored a hat-trick against Atletico Madrid in 2018. And then previous seasons, he could not do it alone. And yes, Edge is no longer on his side where he'll have to do the whole running from the middle of the park. He just needed that midfield engine and fulcrum that will serve the plates for him hot and then he'll eat it. I remember those days of Juventus when they used to have a certain Arturo Vidal. I'm just hurrying up my analysis because of time. Arturo Vidal as well as Matuidi's of this world. But that midfield currently is not really worth it, you know, that could help him do it. So at the end of the day, he didn't win the Champions League, is a failure. But on the flip side, he's made Juventus an attractive environment for investors. I remember when he came on board, they had just about a little over 40 million on social media, but he left them with about 114 followers across board. So looking at it, on one side, he was a success. He won 5 trophies, I mean, before leaving. And on the flip side, it wasn't entirely his fault that they could not win the Champions League because of the kind of players that were around him. Yes, a good team defensively, but in the middle of the park, you have Danilo. I mean, Danilo is not your best defender, and a midfielder, I should say. Then you have a certain injury-prone Aaron Ramsey. Mm-hmm. So it's really, the way they manage the club team-wise, pitch-wise, didn't really help, Ronaldo to just, fulfill that potential. But they all made money at the end of the day off the, investments. Sponsorship deals came, merchandise came, Juventus became a big brand. He made all of us follow the Italian Serie A. Some of us became Juventus fan. So in all of it, good marriage. On one hand, that he achieved his own individual stuff, and then on the other hand, he didn't win the Champions League, not entirely his fault.
All right, trying to squeeze in some more conversations. Chuma, France won 2-0 against Finland, first time in three matches during this international break they'll be winning, stretch their lead at the top of the table in Group D of UEFA European qualifications further. 2-0, two goals scored by Antoine Griezmann, couldn't score for Barca, scoring these days for France.
Thierry
Henry's record. Chuma.
Just like Memphis equaling, I think, Johan Cruyff.
France were struggling. France were struggling, as perceived in the French media. L'Equipe and Co. were complaining. But let's just assume France don't qualify for the World Cup. I mean, should defending champions be allowed to get a pass into the next round? I mean, what's the beauty of the World Cup if you don't see defending champions?
Now, still, they mess them up for us now. Because defending champions used to have a free pass until France messed it up in 2002. FIFA look and say, wait, Senegal beat you now. Now, come out for group stage. No more. goal free pass for defending champions.
So that,
yeah, so that with all the too. Quality.
So they messed it up in the beginning, but they will qualify for this one. I think surely they would.
Host
they
is
would.
A, the host slot is
I
enough.
Know it's one win in six. Not
crazy,
one,
man.
One, their first win in six games.
In six
yeah,
games,
and yeah. This international break has wow. three matches been really, really disappointing for them. Let me take you through the
results.
Results.
You call results. In yeah. Africa, now people tell there are no minos in African football. See score line that you're about to share with us. 5-0, 6-1.
Azerbaijan 0, Portugal 3, no Cristiano Ronaldo in there. Republic of Ireland 1, Serbia 1, Bosnia and Herzegovina 2-2 with Kazakhstan, France 2-0 over Finland, Austria 0, Scotland 1. Scotland 1! Yay! Denmark 5, Israel 0.
Your people are big.
You know, we're Scottish. Faroe Island 2, Moldova 1, Montenegro 0, Latvia 0, Netherlands hammered Turkey by 6 goals to 1, made them turn into Turkey. Norway 5, Gibraltar 1, Croatia 3, Slovenia 0, Russia 2-0 over Malta, Slovenia 2-0 over Cyprus, that's the European qualifiers. In Group A of Asia qualifiers, South Korea 1, Lebanon 0, Syria 1, UAE 1, Iran 0, Iraq 0, Iran 3. All right. Vietnam 0, Australia 1 in the other group, and China 0, Japan 1, Oman 0, Saudi Arabia 1. And in Africa, full-time score, Burkina Faso 1-1 with Algeria, Zambia 0, Tunisia 2, Equatorial Guinea 1-0 over Mauritania, Malawi 1-0 over Mozambique, Angola 0, Libya 1, Angola beaten at home, Ethiopia 1-0 over Zimbabwe, Senegal 3-1 over Congo, Guinea-Bissau beat Sudan away from home 4-2, Tanzania defeated Madagascar 3-2. It's been an exciting time on Game On. Can we squeeze in one final call? I absolutely don't think we can, because we have to go. We have to go, guys. It's been a fantastic ride on the show.